ancora qua. Permettetemi una battuta, servirei.
Thank you very much for being here. I think we should use a Maori dance to express what I'm feeling now, because I've always been working in the critical care field, and it's difficult to talk about something which is considered very often as disturbing. I'm going to talk about oncology. And oncology, critical care are often connected to the notion of a therapeutic obstinacy. But this is not true. Critical care nurses and oncological nurses must support the patient in a number of situations which are not managed by other healthcare professionals. Pain management is an issue which is shared between oncology and critical care. And therapeutic obstinacy has nothing to do with it. I'd like to briefly introduce my presentation. There will be a short introduction, and our clinical case will be divided into some steps. Admission, first of all, respiratory failure, multi-organ failure, and then the last phase is the phase of the abandonment. And I'll tell you why I've chosen this term. Yesterday, John referred to the ethical values involved in our work. When talking about pain management, we cannot forget that our profession has a major mission, that is relieving pain and suffering in our patients. But sometimes we tend to forget this because we referred to ideologies which actually do not belong to nurses. Critical care nurses cannot forget what their mission is, relieving suffering. And this is the focus of the therapeutic plan and of the healthcare services which are provided to children. And children have major difficulty in defending themselves, and Jos referred to this yesterday. Children are not able to defend themselves from our delivery of services. I'm not referring to specialized pediatric wards. I'm talking about nurses who, generally speaking, work with adults. So whenever we find a pediatric case, very often we are not able to understand what is happening. Pediatric care is a very specific field of activity, so it is important to be prepared to treat children. Otherwise, we run the risk of having a psychological trauma. Yesterday, one of the participants referred to training. Well, it is true that sometimes we're not given the official opportunity to be trained, but we've got a duty, that of finding ways to train ourselves to treat and manage pain. And we discuss this problem within Agnarti oftentimes. Whenever there's a problem in pain management, I've got to do my best as a nurse to activate all the possible channels and tools to avoid pain. We should establish partnerships with psychologists, for instance, because we may find opportunities for training. And common sense is important here, because if I cannot use scales, I do have my own personal, individual common sense, and I cannot pretend that nothing is happening, that pain is not there. We've got to help patients, and we've got to help parents, because very often when a child is injured, the parents are so shocked that they're really unable to react properly. So it is important to support them and allow them to be close to their child. Yesterday we heard many beautiful definitions of pain. But when the game gets tough, when the play gets tough, toughs get playing, I called one of our patients and I asked her, tomorrow I'll be speaking in front of 1,000 nurses, what should I tell them about pain? And she immediately reacted, tell them to be cautious, to be kind. That's a very good reaction, I think. And Elena is listening to me now. My patient is listening to me via the internet because she wants to know what nurses have got to say about pain.
Quindi vediamo quello che la letteratura dice, la letteratura più che la letteratura diciamo
So apart from the literature, it is interesting to read books about pain. This is a book by Maria Rita Parsi, a psychologist who's been working with children for many years. This is a girl, a 9 years old girl, saying, when I feel pain in my body, I feel I'm getting mad and I cannot control pain because I am no doctor and I don't know what I should do when I suffer. And she adds, but I'm getting used to it. It is true that oncological patients do not react, but very often oncological patients get tortured somehow. That's why they do not react. And the girl goes on saying, I'm getting used to pain, to feel pain in my body. And now I am realizing that pain does not exceed some specific levels. This is a drawing made by one of our patients, and I think it's self-explanatory. Let's talk about her case. A 7 years old girl. And this girl arrives to our resuscitation department with a suspected diagnosis of leukemia. And when she comes to our hospital, she's not aware of her disease. She feels fine, and so she's very lively. She's a girl who has not yet met suffering. So, from the physical point of view, this girl didn't need anything, apparently. But we decided to start working on her disease. Upon admission, she had a high clinical stability. But we decided that a nurse had to guide and welcome her, because we thought that the nurse could be a reference point both for the family and the child. But together with her family, we chose an adequate bed. And we also decided that the mother was allowed to stay with her child, because this is fundamental. We've got a charter of children's rights, and this is a major right for children, having their parents with them. This is our diagram, and you can see the level of understanding and choice. I think that sometimes we've got preconceived ideas. Well, it was true that the child was not aware of her disease, but we decided that it was important to talk about treatment with them. with the child and her parents, her mother in particular. We know that between mother and child there's always a good level of symbiosis, and it was important to us to find a place in that close relationship. It was important to understand what was going on in their heads. It was important to understand their experiences and their perceptions, and this in order to establish together an appropriate therapeutic plan. At that stage, the child was very autonomous. Her degree of autonomy was very high. She only needed our presence. It was important to establish a relationship based on trust. This in order to win the child's cooperation, and we tried to become somehow toys in this little girl's hands so that she could explore us, use us, and in order to realize that we would not be harmful to her. So in this first stage, we decided that it was extremely important to avoid stress. The reference point would be the nurse for the child, because the nurse has specific competencies in such a situation. The nurse is ready to care for the patient, and the nurse is ready to use all the possible instruments leading to a positive relationship based on trust. And the previous speaker told us that we can no longer accept an organization which is based on the hospital's needs and not on the patient's needs. We got to focus on the patient and her family's needs. This was our starting point. We haven't got the time to organize briefings. Very often we take decisions together with doctors during the physical examination of the patient, or decisions are made whenever we got a little room to rationally reason. Then the idea of comfort was crucial. That's why we decided that it was important to educate the patient and the family as to pain management. So all the procedures were to be carried out after administering analgesia. It was also important to support the child's parents to cope with a child's disease. Behind any disease, there's a waste of energy. Parents very often have to deal with a number of problems when their child is sick. So there's a huge waste of energy, and it is extremely important to eliminate a number of obstacles and barriers in order to support parents. As to pain management, we had to choose a pain assessment scale. We, of course, focused on the stage of development of the child. Well, the child was very lively. I mean, we could even use the McGill questionnaire with her, because she was very lively, very interested in what was happening around her. But we decided to make her life simple, so she was able to self-assess her pain, and we provided her with an instrument, a very simple one, something that makes us adults smile. But she could use this instrument very well. If she had limited pain, she had just one red circle. And when her pain increased, the number of red circles increased too. And she liked using this assessment scale. We also told the mother that she could participate in assessing her child's pain by using a very simple tool, a tool that we should always use together with the VAS scale, that is the Faces Pain Scale. So the mother had an appropriate tool to warn us about painful symptoms. Together with the other members of the healthcare team, we decided how to manage pain during healthcare procedures. Very often nurses are not present when some of these daily routine procedures are carried out, but I think we should be there. We should find time to be there. So together with the oncologist, together with the resuscitator, we met in order to plan treatment for our patient. What kind of protocols should we use? Well, we find whatever we look for in the literature. It is important to be aware of the fact that the literature is there on the internet and that it is important to be able to read it in English. Procedures have been divided into different groups according to the level of pain they generate. Therefore, according to the kind of procedure which is carried out, specific pain management techniques may be used. This definition was given by the WHO in 1993. Both the child and the parents have to be informed as to pain management so that they may choose whenever this is possible and they may cooperate. The WHO also recommends anesthesia in non-compliant children. So I made a search in the literature and I found some studies explaining why anesthesia should be performed whenever magnetic resonance is performed. Some children cannot stay still while RMI is performed. Some children are intubated in order to perform RMI. And in one of the studies, 164 children were given a laryngeal mask. They were all treated in a day hospital and generally speaking, most of them could be discharged half an hour after the RMI was performed. And there were no side effects apart from three cases of vomiting. And in one case, vomiting lasted for 3 hours. In 100% of cases, the MRI was adequately performed, it was not necessary to repeat the test. And in 1998, the WHO stated that non-pharmacological methods must be used in pain management. Of course, non-pharmacological methods must be complementary to pharmacological methods. They cannot replace them, but they are there, they do exist, and they must be used. Distraction techniques are very often suitable, and we could use them with our patient. What happens in reality? I'm oversimplifying the situation, but what I'm saying is based on scientific evidence. Whenever you perform distraction actions, some regions of the brain are involved. These areas of the brain are those receiving painful stimuli. So if we manage to provide other stimuli to the same regions of the brain, painful stimuli are somehow decreased. Of course, these methods are more effective whenever pain is not very severe. And when the procedure, the painful procedure, is not very long. So we're talking about scientific studies providing evidences as to the value of distraction techniques. That is how attention modulates pain. Then there are relaxation techniques, guided imagery techniques. For instance, the child decided that she would imagine to be at the seaside, to dive into the water. And these techniques were valuable when pain was mild or moderate. And the child was not restrained at that stage. We also used the so-called magic glove. It's a fantastic tool. So when I perform puncture, I do not puncture the skin, but the glove itself, so the pain is reduced. And then we also used breathing control techniques. These are unconventional methods, so to say. And when using these methods, we also use the Robier behavioral pain scale that you can see here on the slide. I already told you that it is important to train ourselves, even if we are not allowed to attend formal training. This is a quote of Vittorino Andreoli. And Vittorino Andreoli says, "Pain somehow gets stuck inside us forever. Pain is not a memory like all others, made up of sequences which are interlinked. Pain is the memory of feelings, because pain is not an explanation, but a feeling, an experience. So time and space often disappear. What is perceived is the gaze, the silence, the sentences which are not said, the sigh, which is so rich in meaning." After the initial stage, the patient had a severe respiratory failure, so she had an infectious problem and she had a severe respiratory failure. So that was the second stage. The central nervous system was somehow impaired due to hypoxia. So the child's autonomy, the level of understanding and choice of the child were limited. We started treating her as we always do in case of respiratory failure. The child's situation was critical. In terms of understanding and choice, we decided to change the pain assessment scale. We supported the child's mother so that she could feel empowered in such a situation. The mother did not expect the child to get worse. I mean, respiratory failure was not expected, and I think that in such a case, nurses may play a major role in understanding what can be done for the child's parents, the mother in this case. Is it possible to involve the mother in the child's treatment? Is it possible to identify situations at risk? And therefore, we entrusted the mother with some specific care tasks. also the nurse supports the healthcare, the care pathway, and the nurse also plays an educational role. For instance, the child had a bad mucositis and she had bleeding from the mouth, so she required regular interventions to clean her mouth, and that was a painful procedure, and the mother performed it, the child's mother performed it. Due to the problem of mucositis, the nurse started replanning treatment and all these pain relief procedures, always cooperating with the mother. It was important to improve comfort as much as possible. Pain was not assessed by the child herself. She could have done so, because she was conscious most of the times, but we decided not to make her life more complex, because, we had to perform bronchoalveolar lavage, then non-invasive ventilation was started, so we didn't want to be very invasive. We also started working with the father, because the mother was not able to support her child alone. So the mother too needed some support, and we called the father, who had not been there before because he was working, of course. But we realized that it was important to have his presence too. Then we decided to perform non-invasive ventilation. This choice was made by the whole therapeutic team. It is a more time-consuming procedure, because of course whenever you use the helmet, you've got to educate the child to use it, then an appropriate posture is required. The child has to understand that she is constrained by belts, but that's important to allow her to breathe autonomously. And then it was also important for the patient to understand that intubation is a much more complex procedure, so the patient can understand that non-invasive ventilation is somehow more acceptable. We also use the Cheops scale, which is generally used with younger children, but in our patient the neurological status was a little bit impaired. The minimum score is 4, the maximum is 13. It's a scale which is widely used, in particular for procedural pain. And this scale has been applied to neonates and children. Here you can see it. It assesses behavioral changes, crying, for instance, facial expressions, verbalization, bodily postures, the need for touching the area of pain, lower limb presentation. So the choice of assessment scales is a dynamic activity. I mean, you cannot choose one scale and stick to it forever. It is important to understand how the patient reacts, because if the patient is in severe pain, the patient is not able to self-assess pain, so we've got to find something else. Yesterday, this element was stressed. The scales are often very complex. The McGill questionnaire involves a long list of items, so it is time-consuming, it is complex, and have to say that fortunately enough, our Anglo-Saxon colleagues have modified complex scales. Therefore, we may use Ellen's color scale, which is based on four colors out of eight, and the child may choose four colors out of eight, and the child tells us the color corresponding to the lowest intensity of pain and the color corresponding to the highest intensity of pain. This is a very interesting scale because it also allows us to examine the patient's body map. The patient's body map is colored by the patient according to the pain intensity. Then pediatric nurses may also use another tool. Oncologic pediatric patients tend to erase some areas of their body whenever pain is very intense in that area of the body. This has been shown by some psychological studies. So, if the child may draw his or her own body map, this is extremely useful to help the child to reappropriate, to become once more the owner of his or her body. And this is a very supportive tool for the child. And I'd like to quote Andreoli once more, because his work has really changed my life. Andreoli says that pain is never completely erased. It's a sort of storehouse accompanying us like a shadow. Pain represents our past, but this past becomes our present whenever it is recalled to our consciousness. Then we're now moving to a following stage. The respiratory failure was treated, but then there were complications, and therefore we see the child again with a decompensation, a cardiocirculatory decompensation, and a severe kidney failure. It was important to support the child so that she could cope with this multi-organ failure. The problem had been triggered by an infectious factor, not so much by the pathology itself. What happens when a patient is highly unstable? Well, the decision-making role of the nurse here becomes crucial. It is important to choose the appropriate timing. For instance, when should we put the bladder catheter? When should we perform blood sampling? How should we perform blood sampling? How should we position the nasogastric tube? How can we limit our aggressiveness? Because we tend to be quite aggressive with adult patients, because sometimes we've got time problems, and so we tend to be very aggressive. But with children, we should try and learn to be less aggressive. We should be more respectful. This does not mean that we should delay our treatment. And then the mother's presence was really important, because it was the only way to keep the child awake. And the mother was also important to help the child to use relaxation techniques such as controlled breathing. Controlled breathing was performed by the mother and the child together, and this was helpful to them both. Then in case of renal failure, it is also important to choose the appropriate timing for positioning the catheter, for instance. Maybe I have to perform sedation before performing bronchoalveolar lavage. So these decisions are quite complex in many cases. And the relationship between the child and the mother becomes even closer due to the severity of the child. And this should be emphasized. The mother and child, parents-child, have to be together all the time in such a condition. Well, the nurse's autonomy in this case is reduced, but nurses become key to the mother's education, to the parent's education. We decided to readjust our treatment plan, bearing in mind that timing was a crucial issue. The treatment plan was based, of course, on pain management, and we also decided to support the parents because their child was losing her consciousness, and that was very painful to parents. So psychological support had to be strengthened, and we also resorted to the Parents Association in order to provide help. Pain is no longer acute pain, is no longer connected to procedures. Pain has become total. It involves a number of aspects. That is the previous experience of pain for the child. Then the emotional development of the child, what the child has experienced over time. The understanding of pain by the child. Once more, we chose to question our approach, and we decided to manage pain through the PCA method. And this is a guideline issued by the WHO. We also used the Ellen Scholar scale that is used by the mother. And then we also use another instrument which is very important, the pain journal. The pain journal includes symptoms, the pain assessment score, the treatment carried out, and the results achieved. And the care team discusses results with the child's parents. It is important to have a feedback from this point of view. Then we decided to perform patient-controlled analgesia. PCA was illustrated and discussed yesterday. So it's a patient-controlled infusion, and there are different devices available for PCA. The drug bolus is pre-established, and the patient may perform self-infusion. Thanks to PCA, it is possible to reach a given blood serum concentration over time, so there are no peaks, no overdoses problems. you can see there's a constant blood serum levels of the drug. And children too may use this technique if they're able to understand the cause-effect relationship. That is, when the child understands that whenever he has pain, he may relieve pain by resorting to PCA, the child is allowed to do so. And an indicator, for instance, is that when a child may play with a video game, the child may also use PCA. But in this case, we decided to apply the parent-controlled analgesia. In this case, the mother is going to replace the child. And I'm reaching the end of my presentation, and I'd like to quote Sergio Zavoli, who said, deep and intimate pain invites you to flee from men, from the society. Loneliness paradoxically becomes a must to leave the communion giving access to infinity. End of quote. This is the final stage, the stage of abandonment, and this is why, well, I have chosen abandonment as a word, because I know that there are some children, some of our pediatric patients who are following us now on the internet. Which are our competencies in this difficult stage? It was difficult to find the appropriate words to describe this situation, and now I'd like to quote
Infermieri, ricorda che ho bisogno di te anche se non posso guarire.
And I'd like to quote The Little Prince by Saint-Exupéry. Remember that I need you even if I cannot be cured. Be a smiling mirror to me even in suffering. Do not react to my parents' provocations. They are confused. I don't know what's happening to me, but the contact of your hands is helping me. Do not think about adding days to my life, but think about adding life to my days. When you know that the time has come for me to fly away, help my mother to take me in her arms. But if she can't, please take me.